Welcome back to another episode of the Right Read Podcast. I'm your co-host, Davon Reed.
And I'm your other co-host, Miles Reed.
And today we have a living legend in the building with us, Coach Jim Larrañaga. How you doing, Coach?
Hi, Davon. Miles, good to see you guys again.
Great to see you. Great to see you. So we're very excited to have a future Hall of Famer and my college head coach at the University of Miami, Coach L, here. We're going to get into the history of his coaching career, all of the records that he shattered, all of the history that he's made, and how he's changed and impacted so many lives. But before we get into all that, you know that we got to do what we always do on the Right Read Podcast and talk about what we have on today. So we'll start with our guest. Coach, what you got on today?
All Adidas, all the time. That's an Adidas half zip, Adidas pants, Adidas socks, Adidas shoes. I'm always Adidas.
Three-stripe life.
Yeah. It's nice.
It does look good.
Well, I'm men in black. You know, I like black. It makes you look slimmer, more athletic.
Okay.
Avon, you want to go next?
Yeah, I'll go next. On top, I have a Supreme button-up shirt. This reminds me of a painting that we used to have in our house, Miles, growing up. This is a dope Supreme button-up shirt. It's got like some pool tables. It's a lot going on, but really digging this. I picked this up in, I want to say, Paris this summer. So for the pants, we got on some Carhartt. I don't know what color green this is, but I love the green. Wide leg jeans. And then on the feet, I'm back with the New Balance again. I finally found a pair that I can get in my size. So these are 740s, and this is a collab with Concept. So really digging these. These are pink, a little orange, a little green. So loving these. So
yeah, I see you went the colorful route. I went the colorful route as well. I have a Zara dress shirt. I want to say like Caribbean print. Pants, one of my favorite brands, Uniqlo, ankle pants. And then for feet, I have some very clean Clarks. I'm starting to get back into my dressy kind of bag, and I'm loving these. I got these probably a few weeks ago for a good deal, too. They're like a picnic basket material with some suede, and I like these a lot.
Very nice. Very nice colors, too.
Thank you.
This episode of the Right Read Podcast is brought to you by Studio 327. At Studio 327, where services meet luxury, you'll leave feeling beautiful, light, and at your best. We specialize in color, high fashion color, natural hair services, and small business mentoring. Our salon is home to not only creative stylists, but also skilled estheticians who excel in their craft. For more information, please contact owner Ashley Porter at acporter62@gmail.com.
So before we get into the actual interview, Coach, I just want to bring the fans up to the speed if they don't know the illustrious career that you've had. You've coached for 39 years with a record of 744-500. You were 270-166 in your 14 years at Miami, with six tournament appearances, NCAA tournament appearances, four Sweet 16s, one Elite Eight, one Final Four, one ACC tournament champ, and two regular season ACC champion.
Correct.
Yeah. AP Coach of the Year, two-time ACC Coach of the Year, number seven all-time winningest D1 coach, number 10 winningest coach in ACC history, only coach in NCAA history with 100-plus conference wins at three different Division I schools, and one of four coaches, three active in the NCAA, with 150-plus wins at three D1 schools. You've coached at Bowling Green,
yep,
George Mason, and Miami. Had seven players drafted under you at Miami and were a player at Providence College.
Well, you were one of those players that got drafted, so you should know that stat.
Yeah, man, you definitely helped me call my dream a reality, and I'm forever grateful for that. I remember after our senior game, you had the parents in, and we were kind of talking about agents, and you said right in front of everybody, I think that was the first time I heard you just flat out say, you were like, I think, Davon, you're going to get drafted. So I was like, wow. Or playing the NBA, one of the two. So.
Well, I think I said both that day because, you know, what's happened in college basketball is so different than what you experienced. You came in as a freshman. You got to play a fair amount as a freshman, but you were a better sophomore, even a better junior, and a great senior year. And that put you on the radar for these NBA scouts and NBA teams. And going 32nd in the draft, second player chosen in the second round, go to the Phoenix Suns. You got a career started. A lot of guys dream about that. You know that. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't come true. For you, it did come true. And I'm very, very proud of you and what you accomplished in college and since college.
Thank you, Coach. I appreciate that.
So you had a great coaching career, Coach. What made you kind of get into that field?
Well, I got started very early. When I was a ninth grader, a freshman in high school, my high school team was 7-0 at Christmas time. We went home, Christmas break, came back, New Year's, and my high school coach, a legendary coach, Jack Curran, called me into the office and said, Larry, and that's what he always called me, Larry, short for Larinaga, and he said, Larry, Brother Edmund just quit the Marist Order. He's no longer at Molloy, and I want you to coach the freshman team.
As a
freshman in high school, I said, Mr. Curran, you know I'm only 14 years old. And he said, yeah, but you can do a great job. Mm-hmm. So you just get Dick Zeitler, who is our point guard, the two of you co-coach the team, and, you know, you'll do fine. We went undefeated, won the city championship, and after that I decided, you know what, I like that. I love coaching. It was a lot of fun.
That seems like he put you got a lot of trust in, like, also basketball IQ in order to be a coach at a 14, like you said.
Yeah, I would say Mr. Curran was and is a legend in New York City. He's the winningest coach in the state of New York in two sports, basketball and baseball. Okay. So he recognized in me something I didn't know at the time, that I had a good sense for the game and how to play, and that I had some leadership skills that he recognized, and he helped me get started. He became my role model, and I try to emulate him in everything I have done as a college coach. 39 years as a Division I head coach, but a lot of what I've done, my high school teammates and college teammates say, hey, you remind us of Coach Curran.
You and Bill Russell might be the only player coaches ever in the history of basketball. Okay, Coach, so let's get a little bit into your college coaching career. Which, as a head coach of the three schools, George Mason, Bowling Greens, and University of Miami, would you say was your favorite experience coaching-wise?
Well, first of all, I love coaching, so I loved coaching at all three places. I'd say Bowling Green was the biggest challenge because we were very underfunded. And when I first got started, our staff salaries were so low. The two assistant coaches that I hired basically had no college experience. So I had to train them while I was still learning how to be a head coach. George Mason was a little bit different. We took over a program that had seven consecutive losing seasons. Mm-hmm. They were the losingest program in the conference history at the time. But when my staff and I got there, we already had a very clear plan as to what we wanted to do, how to do it. And we implemented that right away. And in year two, we won the conference championship, regular season, and tournament championship, went to the NCAA for only the second time in school history. And then we were able to keep that going for many years and eventually get to the Final Four in 2006. Wow. And then when I got to Miami, that was kind of my dream job because I always wanted to coach in the ACC. Wow. And Miami had been kind of, I'll say, in the middle of the pack for many years. They had never had a winning record in the ACC. And so again, my whole staff came with me. We knew exactly what we wanted to do and how to accomplish it. We had a great group of guys, and we had Shane Larkin, who was a NBA draft choice, Duran Scott, Trey McKinney-Jones, Kenny Kaji, Julian Gamble, Reggie Johnson, Ryan Brown. And that nucleus of guys were able to win the regular season and the tournament championship in year two again. And that really got the program started in the right direction.
Sounds like you had a great coaching experience with different players and even different coaching staffs. What would you say was your, like, the best, your fondest memory of coaching?
Well, I'm going to put it in different categories. As far as players, one of the strange things, and I don't know how many coaches have done this at the Division I level, but I have two sons, Jay, who played for me at Bowling Green, was a starter. When he graduated, he was the leading three-point shooter in school history, played 12 years of professional basketball, and is now an NBA assistant coach with the LA Clippers. Okay. And then my son, John, was a academic All-American at George Mason, again, a starter, who had a great career, played several years in, of pro basketball overseas. So coaching your own sons as a Division I head coach at two different institutions, Bowling Green and George Mason, was quite unique. I also had the unique experience of taking George Mason to the Final Four and Miami to the Final Four. Not a lot of coaches have been able to do that during the course of their careers. And so I have great memories of both of those experiences.
Okay, now I want to get into something a little bit more personal. This is a two-part question. Who is the toughest coach that you've coached against in college? And then who is the toughest player that you played against as a player or that you had to coach against as a player that you had to coach against? So two-part.
Okay, so the first part is I've coached against so many great coaches, Hall of Fame guys, Mike Krzyzewski, Roy Williams, Rick Pitino, John Calipari. Those guys are all great. Tom Izzo, Bill Self. But probably the guy that I struggled to coach against the most was Tony Bennett at the University of Virginia. Whew. Tony Bennett had such a unique style to everybody else. When we played Duke or Carolina, and you know this, David, you beat those teams. But yes, Tony Bennett's style of slowing the game down and keeping you on defense for 30 seconds, and then you can't score on them quickly.
Elbows and blocks.
Oh, man, they took away every dribble penetration, contested every three. So I'd have to put Tony Bennett at the top of the list along with someone else that you guys don't even know about, his dad, Dick Bennett.
Oh, wow.
One of the reasons that I improved my coaching is because when I was at Bowling Green, I scheduled Wisconsin-Green Bay. And the great coach was Dick Bennett, Tony's dad. And again, he had such a unique style. I struggled against it to the point that after we played a home-and-home series with them, I called Dick and said, I'd like to come to Wisconsin, sit down and pick your brain because I think you're the best coach I've ever gone against. Wow, and so I've spent there with another coach, a guy named Barry Collier, who was the coach at Butler at the time and started the Butler way. Barry and I went to visit Dick Bennett, came back, absolutely loved the experience, changed my coaching philosophy a little bit, and improved it. So I give credit to Tony Bennett and Dick Bennett. Those were the toughest guys I can say were difficult for me. As far as players, well, I played against some unbelievable great players in my time, Hall of Famers, guys like Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Played against him my sophomore year in college in Madison Square Garden, December of 1969. He was a senior. I was a sophomore. UCLA beat our Providence team, but it was a good game. Okay. But I played against Dr. J. His very first college game as a Division I player was against Providence at UMass, Curry Hicks Arena on the UMass campus. Mm-hmm. And he scored 27 points and had 28 rebounds. Mm-hmm. And I thought at that time when we left the arena, they beat us like 90-85. I said, that's the luckiest player I ever played against. This guy can't be that good. A week later, I saw him play on TV. He had 30 points and 25 rebounds against the University of Rhode Island. And when I'm watching it, I'm saying, oh, my gosh, the guy is awesome. And then I had to play against him. I matched up with him two more times. One more, they had to return the game his junior year, my senior year. We beat him 72-71. I did not have a great game, but I guarded him. He did not have a great game. But we were up one with 10 seconds to go. They ran a play for Dr. J. I'm on him. He shoots a foul line jumper. I fouled him. They didn't call it. He went in. He rebounded, tried to tip the ball in. I hit his arm again, missed it. We won by one. So it was a great win for Providence College. And it was their first loss of the season. They were undefeated in a top 25 team at the time. And then one last time was after I graduated from college. I played against Dr. J and his team in an event called the Portchester Tournament. Okay. What they call those pro-am events now. Yep. I scored 47. He had 36. My team lost to his team. They had a bunch of NBA guys. Dr. J, JoJo White, who was a great player for the Boston Celtics, and several other guys. And I played with a bunch of my friends. We used to hang out in the Bronx and play in the park. So that was my last experience about playing against an NBA Hall of Famer.
So not only a Hall of Fame coach, but an extraordinary player as well. And playing against Dr. J, giving Dr. J 47, I mean, that speaks for itself. And we didn't mention this, but aren't you also in the Providence Hall of Fame?
Yeah, I've actually been very fortunate to be selected for a number of Hall of Fames. I'm in the New York City CHSAA Hall of Fame, my high school Hall of Fame, Providence College Hall of Fame, the University of Miami Hall of Fame, and actually a couple of others. And as you mentioned earlier, I've been nominated for the Naismith Hall of Fame.
Oh, yeah, that's on the way. I got to get out there for that one.
Yeah.
I got to get out there to see that. But.
Well, you mentioned the players that I coached against. I'd like to start with Gary Trent, who was called the Shaq of the Mac in the Mid-American Conference. He gave us 49. He was unstoppable. His son, Gary Trent Jr., plays in the NBA now. But Gary Trent Sr., 6'7", 245 pounds of muscle. He had 10 three-point plays, not threes, actually getting fouled and making the shot. So he's probably the best player I ever coached against at Bowling Green. But I coached so many against so many great players, like at North Carolina when I was an assistant at Virginia. They had Michael Jordan and James Worthy, Sam Perkins, Brad Daugherty. I coached against Pearl Washington, who was at Syracuse. Lenny Bias, the great Lenny Bias from Maryland. I coached against Lenny. The number of players I've had a chance to coach against is extreme. But the players I also had a great opportunity to coach at Miami, guys like Shane Larkin, who's a first-round pick, and Bruce Brown and Lonnie Walker, yourself, Isaiah Wong, Jordan Miller, all those guys were so much fun to coach because, like yourself, they were so passionate and they wanted to win. They were driven to lead us to victory, win the ACC, get to the NCAA, get to the Final Four, try to win a national championship. So, you know, a great experience for me.
Yeah, a lot of fun playing alongside some of those players that you mentioned. I know you briefly touched on this. I kind of just want to segue because I know it, but the fans may not know. Your Virginia career, you talked about playing against Michael Jordan and being assistant coach at Virginia. Just kind of touch on not only the people you played against, but who you had a pleasure of coaching and how high they went in the draft at Virginia.
Yeah, when I was at Virginia, the ACC was not only the best conference in the country, we had Ralph Sampson, who was the number one player in the country. He's the three-time National Player of the Year. His teammate, Jeff Lamp, was also a first-round draft choice. Then we had Olden Polonese, a 6'10 center who was a first-round draft choice. Very Olden's claim to fame is he got traded for Scottie Pippen on draft day.
Oh, wow.
So very interesting story there. But then when we played Carolina, that was my scout. So I had to prepare the team. And the funny thing in preparing the team to play against a Michael Jordan and a Sam Perkins, they had very clearly defined games. Michael Jordan was really a post-up player. They ran what we call B action, a diagonal cut to the low post, post him up, put him on the low block, feed him the ball, and he'd make his turnaround jump shot. Sam Perkins, they'd run it for him. He'd go to the opposite low post. He'd catch it and shoot his left-hand jump hook. So back in the day, those guys, James Worthy was the same way. Carolina was very systematic. The Carolina system was always the same, and they just had great players to fill each of their roles.
And wasn't Rick Carlisle this, you know?
The coach of the Pacers?
Yeah, having a great run. Wasn't he on that team as well?
Yeah, he was. Rick Carlisle ended up not being recruited out of high school, not being recruited out of prep school, got a scholarship to Maine in June of his prep school year, went there for 2 years, transferred to Virginia, played for us for 2 years, and had a great two-year career. In his senior year, a couple of stories about that. In his senior year, he helped us get to the Final Four. And in the second round, we played Arkansas, the number two ranked team in the country, who had a bunch of NBA guys. And he hit the game-winning shot at the buzzer to put us into the Sweet 16. We beat Syracuse in the Sweet 16 and ended up beating Indiana to go to the Final Four, where we lost to Hakeem Olajuwon. Oh, that's another guy I coached against, Hakeem Olajuwon.
Yeah, how could you forget? Yeah.
Well, there's so many. Too many. There's just so many guys. We lost in overtime to Houston. Rick Carlisle got drafted by the Boston Celtics in 1984. Mm-hmm. He's been in the NBA as a player and won the world championship with the Boston Celtics a couple of times. Mm. Then as a coach, winning the world championship with the Dallas Mavericks. And now he's close to getting back to... getting back to the finals and winning another championship.
Yeah, you're on a great run too.
Yeah.
So, coaching, being a player, and all that stuff seems like you had fun with that. So, and there's new stuff, and it's been in the most recent years about NILs and transfer portals. It's being more common. How do you feel about that?
Well, I think if those two things hadn't occurred, I'd still be coaching. Mm-hmm. But I think the state of college basketball and state of college athletics has changed so dramatically. You know, if you go back and had asked me in the 1990s what I thought should happen, I would have said, I think players need to have a salary. Mm-hmm. They need to be, like any other student, yeah, I can have a job. And the job is to play college athletics. You know, when people come to games, they pay a lot of money to watch your teams play. And yet the players were devoting time and would be called amateurs, yet the NCAA was making billions of dollars televising it and making money off of the player's name, image, and likeness. So I've always been in favor. But when it got to this now generation of NIL and the transfer portal, it's chaos. Mm-hmm. And I think the NCAA and Congress, they need to get together. There needs to be rules. There needs to be transparency. There needs to be contracts. We need to understand what we're dealing with, because now every player has an agent, mm-hmm. and those agents are negotiating, and you don't know if it's in good faith or not. Right. So I think for college coaches like myself, my vision for my program was always to build a culture where players would just get better and better. Yeah. And so they'd be well prepared, whether it be for a professional basketball or a professional life in business. Like yourself, you're a great student. You're the ACC student athlete of the year, your senior year. You know, that's the kind of trajectory I wanted for all our players. You ended up still being able to play professional basketball, but you also earned a great degree. Now, players are more interested in, well, how much money am I gonna get? And if after a year, if I'm not getting enough money where I'm playing now, I'm going to go to another school, transfer, and if that doesn't get me enough money, I'll transfer again and again. There are plenty of players now that have gone to 3 and 4 schools, and I think that's not healthy for that individual. The money is great, but I'm not sure that instability and lack of continuity is so good in the long run, because most of life is about relationships.
Yeah.
And I don't know how you build a great relationship with your coach and your teammates if you're constantly bouncing from one school to another.
Also, not even just the relationship aspect, which is a big deal, but also like learning, you know, that hardened shell that you can't run from. Oh, I didn't like it here, so I'm just gonna go over here. You gotta learn how to deal with adversity. And that, when I was in college, that wasn't even really a thought. Like, oh, I'm gonna just go to the next school, because you had to sit back then. But I feel like now people are just ducking adversity, which is the tough part. You know?
Well, the first thing about transfers and having to sit out, I always thought that was an advantage. Because like your teammates, Angel Rodriguez and Sheldon McCollum, sat out a year and learned the Miami system, mm-hmm. understood our culture. So by the time they became eligible to play that next year, they were ready to go. Mm-hmm. And they fit in beautifully. Mm-hmm. When you come in and you face some adversity, especially young guys, their freshman, sophomore year, there's always adversity.
Right.
When the way you deal with the adversity is, I transfer and start a new career someplace else, that to me doesn't make sense, because you're going to deal with adversity during the game. How are you going to deal with that, falling behind by 10 or a team switches zone and you can't make a shot? Mm-hmm. You got to learn to overcome your problems. You know, I don't know how many games that we played where we had to come from behind, mm-hmm. but there's so many times that if you run away from your problems instead of dealing with your problems. One of the expressions I've always used is fix the problem, not the blame. Mm. Don't look for someone to blame. Don't complain and whine and make excuses. You know, really fix whatever's wrong by working harder. Some guys need to get stronger. You need to shoot your three better. You need to be a better free throw shooter. You need to be a better defender or rebounder. Those are the things you should be focused on. Improve, get better. Because once your basketball career is over, I guarantee you, you're going to have issues in life that you need to have some defense mechanisms, some ways to deal with this.
Right.
If you enjoyed this episode of the Right Read podcast, like, share, subscribe to our YouTube at the Right Read. Follow us on Instagram, X, and TikTok at the Right Read.
Again, Coach, we are so thankful to have you here on another episode of the Right Read podcast with us. I tell people all the time, you are my favorite coach that I've ever had. I've had some great coaches, but it's just different coming from you. And clearly it comes from experience. It comes from a place of love and caring, which is something I could appreciate. I tell people all the time, I was getting recruited by over 30 schools. I had over 30 scholarships in high school, but it was just something different about the way you and Coach Huger recruited me. You showed love, but at the same time, I remember you telling me, look, I think you can rebound some more. You know what I mean? and just being truthful with me, instead of most coaches where they just, oh, you're going to come in, you're going to average 20 points, you're going to be the greatest player. So I appreciate the realness. I appreciated you coming all the way to Ewing, New Jersey, sitting in my mom's living room with my family and I, and telling me you wanted me to play for you at the university. So I love you, Coach, and we appreciate you coming on the Right Read podcast, and we're just thankful, man.
Well, the nice thing is, I told you could rebound more, and you sure did.
Yeah.
You became a great rebounder in college.
So thank you, Coach. Miles, anything
Miles?
Else you want to say?
Thank you. That's all I got to say. I know. When I was super young, when I first met, middle school?
Yeah.
I was in middle school. Like Davon said, we was eating pizza for dinner.
I remember.
You and Coach Huger. Since then, it was just all positive vibes. And I knew once the ball was rolling for Davon's decision, I knew it was going to be, Miami was definitely in his top three for sure. And I'm glad he chose Miami. Also because he is.
Thanks, Miles. It's a pleasure to be on with you guys. You got a great thing going. I especially like your wardrobe. It's very colorful.
Thank you. I appreciate it. That's a part of our podcast. We do a fit check every episode, so you'll get a chance to see your fit back on the screen. But we're going to wrap it up right here. We thank you for tuning in for another episode of the Right Read podcast. I'm your co-host, Davon Reed.
And I'm your other co-host, Miles Reed.
And one more time for Coach L, the future Hall of Famer, and just an even better human being. So thank you again. We'll see you next time.